Dishwasher in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. You'll know my next guest if you're a fan of America's Most Wanted, like I am. My next guest, John Lieberman, was part of America's Most Wanted for 6 years. He's a broadcaster, an Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, by the way. He's out on his own now. He's going to be doing a radio show on CyberStationLive.com called True Facts with John Lieberman, and he's doing some on-air work for Track180.com. He's the president of his own media company, Lieberman Media, and it's always a kick to have John on the show. How are you, sir?
Hey, Dana, it's good to talk to you. It's been a little while. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, when I sent you an email, and we decided that we do the show tonight, and we've done, I don't know, four or five shows in the past, we've always talked about crime, and of course we're going to do a little bit about that tonight, because otherwise I would be remiss in my hosting duties. But as John Lieberman, the broadcaster, as John Lieberman, the journalist, when you see what's been going on in Egypt, John, and you see that, in fact, there was a report came out today of a CBS journalist, a young gal, being allegedly sexually assaulted, beaten, and all the problems that went on over there. I know when you sign up to that duty, there's always that chance, just like what I do when I'm not talking on the radio. What are your thoughts about Egypt and the media?
Well, I got to tell you, it's horrifying. I mean, Dana, it's horrifying. Look, every time I look at the journalists out there, you know, I just think to myself that in a lot of ways, even though journalism has gotten a really bad rap, particularly TV journalism, it is still a noble career. It's a noble calling. And it always makes me think about when I was in Baghdad and all around Iraq in 2004, covering the war. And one thing that I said to my crew before we even went over there, I said, you know what? I don't want to stay in Baghdad. I don't want to just see, you know, what everybody is seeing. I want to go around the country. Not only do I want to go around the country, but I want to go around the country, and I don't want to be embedded with our soldiers. I want to go around the country and talk to the locals.
Right.
And I think that, and one thing that I'm mostly proud of is that going around Iraq at the time, I went to places and talked to people that nobody was reporting on, because everybody was kind of focused on Baghdad. So, and rightfully so, I mean, that was kind of the hotbed and where everything was happening. But we went around the country, and some of what we saw was uplifting. You know, we went up to Sulaymaniyah in the northern part of Iraq. I'll never forget it. And we interviewed some kids who were playing soccer, and they said, you know what? They said, we can now play soccer freely and not worry about Saddam Hussein and everything like that. And then obviously we also saw things that were horrible going on. But my heart goes out to all of the journalists, you know, over there covering what's happening in Egypt. Look, it's not a war zone like in Iraq, but as you saw today by the case that, you know, that you've referenced, covering any sort of conflict or world-changing event like what we're seeing in Egypt comes with risks, and it comes with, you know, major risks. And and so it's appalling. It's appalling whenever you see, you know, any sort of issues. I mean, look what happened to Anderson Cooper.
Right.
He and his crew were attacked while they were over there just trying to report, you know, what's going on. So, I mean, I think that it proves a couple things. A, it proves that, you know, there are journalists still trying to, you know, to get to the truth, to tell the truth, and to tell it to the audience. And also that, you know, frankly, that we need to appreciate those people over there who are putting themselves in harm's way to report the stories to the world.
That's the big part of it. John Lieberman's here, and, you know, I got to share this with you, John. My youngest son is going to be starting a broadcasting degree in the fall. and he's watching the coverage, and he's saying to his mother, he said, "Oh, I'd love to be there. I can't wait till I get to go somewhere like that and report." And, of course, the wife's eyes are about the size of basketballs, and she's looking at me saying, "Wait, tell this kid that he's nuts." And I say, "I can't." You can see he has the heart, he has the desire, he wants to do this. And I think, John, and I want to get your comment on this, when we see broadcasting and we see journalism today with all the cable channels, yeah, the mainstream media, the internet, what we're doing here, what you're going to be doing, where has broadcasting changed? How has it changed since the time that you started to what you're doing now?
Well, it's changed in amazing ways. You know, I actually teach a reporting and research course on MediaBistro.com, which is a big website for industry insiders and media people, but also for students going through school. And the business has just changed so much. And I say business because that's what it's become in most circles. It's always been kind of a business, but now in many areas, the focus is on spending as little as possible and trying to get the most content for the smallest amount of money. Now, that being said, there is so much amazing stuff going on with technology that, you know, the biggest way journalism has changed is it's not only a 24/7 business now, it's a 24/7 to the minute, to the second, to the tweet business.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be, you know, the reporter's job these days is literally a moment-by-moment job to relay everything that's going on. And sure, it's injected with opinion and commentary and things like that, but it is a moment-by-moment media universe now. There's no longer a news cycle. You know, the news cycle back in the day used to be 24 hours, 48 hours. Now, events are reported so quickly and opinions are given so quickly and so widely that the business is a 24/7 business, and that's a good thing for the consumer and it's a bad thing. The good thing is, you know, you're getting as much information as you could possibly ingest you're going to get. The downside to that is there's not a whole lot of vetting of a lot of the information, so you get false information out there.
Yeah.
You get, I'm all for citizen journalists. There are a lot of good citizens out there who are tweeting and Facebooking and putting information out there, but you still have to deal, you know, in facts. But the other part of it is, though, it's such an exciting time in media. You know, I have now undertaken a new radio show with CyberStationUSA.com, and the exciting thing is it's not just radio. It's radio streaming over the Internet, but with this interactive factor where people can actually live chat to you. It's almost like talk radio over the Internet meets television meets, I mean, there's so many great ways to engage the viewer and the listener now that we never had before, that it's just amazing. And the other thing is, it's amazing because you get entities like Track180.com, which is another group that I've joined up with to spearhead investigative projects for them, and you get these sites that, like Track180, who integrate technology with true journalism, with accountability, and you're getting real good quality stuff coming out, and that's the exciting part of the business.
Absolutely. John Lieberman's here. You'll know John from America's Most Wanted. John, let's talk about crime reporting here a little bit. Of course, one of the staples in the business, America's Most Wanted. We have Nancy Grace, Greta Van Susteren, when she was doing crime. She's gone to politics now. But we've always talked about the stories, and I try to do it here. And, of course, you did it for a number of years, and I believe you'll continue doing it, where we want to try and help those whose voices just can't be heard. Let's talk about that a little bit. And is the media today, cable media, doing a good enough job, or should there be more shows out there like America's Most Wanted or what you do?
You know, that's a great I'm glad you asked that question. You know, that my media company that I formed, Lieberman Media, I mean, our mantra, our mission statement is to give voice to the voiceless, which is a term that's been around and kind of a slogan that's been around for a long time. But I think it's I think it's more true now than it's ever been. And America's Most Wanted has done and continues to do a great job to give voice to crime victims and their families who may otherwise never have a voice. It's not every crime story is a sexy front page, splashy story. And that's where shows like America's Most Wanted really do give voice to the voiceless. And what I'm trying to do through my radio show and through the work on Track 180 and some other avenues is to not only give voice to the voiceless, but also not forget about them. You know, the problem is, in this day and age, with so much information, there's always something knocking the next thing off of the front page, off of the lead story, and we might give voice to the voiceless for a little while, but then they're all but forgotten about. So what I am trying to do at CyberStationUSA.com on my radio show is to really give voice to the voiceless and add perspective and never forget. So to follow somebody's story, my first broadcast next Thursday for CyberStation, I'm going to feature a woman whose daughter was murdered in California. And ever since the daughter was murdered, she has been pushing for legislation, pushing, can never get anybody to listen. She got a local congressman who introduced a piece of legislation, but then it sort of dropped. It's families like that, that once we're off the front page, once the stories are no longer in bright lights, those are the stories that we can, A, learn the most from, and B, those are the kinds of situations that allow us in our reporting to bring perspective to everything. When we have a few years to look back and say, wow, well, here's what we've learned. And that's a great thing about track180.com is that it's based on looking back at where we've been and evaluating different things that different people have said and holding them accountable and then trying to figure out a solution and asking the viewer to say, okay, now that you have this information, now do something with it. And I think that that's still one thing that we're lacking in the media is, you know, you may come away outraged at a story you see, but you really don't know what to do once you are armed with that information.
Yep.
So, you know, these are the types of things that make me excited about some of the projects I'm involved in and some others are, is that not only are we going to give voice to the voiceless, but we're going to also offer some outlets. So now that you're outraged, here's what you can do about it. And and that to me is very, very encouraging.
Absolutely. John Lieberman's here. Click on the link in the show notes to check out his webpage. John, when it comes to this type of reporting, and I can, you know, say that even on my show, some of my most listened to shows have had the most unpopular guests on. When I interviewed Drew Peterson, for example, or when I interviewed Joe Tacopina, Joran van der Sloot's lawyer, or some of these, what the public will consider to be monsters, yet there's always that public desire, there's that craving to hear more about these stories. Yes, there's that group out there that want to help. They want to hear that story, like you say, giving voice to the voiceless. But there's those that are out there that crave that story. They want to hear more, as sickening as it is, about Lindsay Lohan. Or, of course, OJ, we can go on and on and on about him. And I'm curious, for all the years that you've been in media, why do you think that people really give a damn about Lindsay Lohan when there's a story out there like you're going to be covering on your show or I cover on my show that really needs to be heard?
Well, I'm going to tell you why I think. I think that, A, it's because our society is infatuated in general with celebrities. And I think that's because, you know, we like stories of people who have faults. We like stories. We're attracted to the human, we're attracted to the humanity of it all. So we hold athletes and we hold celebrities to higher standards. So when we can get a glimpse of ourselves and kind of our shortcomings in these celebrities and in these athletes, then we glom onto that, and that really attracts us. And I'm going to give you a really good example, but I'm going to give you an example that is near and dear to my heart, but I think in some ways it speaks to what you're saying, but it's a good combination of both. One of my major guests in my first radio show, which is going to be next Thursday at 7 on cyberstationusa.com, one of my first guests is Reverend Albert Whitehead. And that name may not ring a bell to anybody, but Reverend Whitehead, to anybody who's a football fan out there, is Ray Lewis's biological father. Ray Lewis, linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens, right, one of the best at his craft. Ray Lewis was charged, accused of murder in Atlanta. We all remember the case. And I decided to have Reverend Whitehead on my program, and I just taped the interview, actually, because I thought that he would be honest with me. I thought that he would be upfront with me. And as it turns out, he was extremely honest. And his story is this. His story is that he wasn't around for a lot of Ray Lewis's childhood. He, by his own accord and his own admission, during my interview with him, he said, look, he said, I got high all the time. He said, and I chose drugs over life for a very long time until I realized I needed to make a change. And he went to his son, Ray Lewis, and he asked for forgiveness. And on my program, he said, it empowered me that Ray looked me in the eye and forgave me and said that he still believed I could be a true man. And, you know, and also Reverend Whitehead, you know, obviously spoke about, and you'll hear it on my program, spoke about what Ray Lewis told him about what happened down in Atlanta when Ray was charged with murder, and we'll get into all that. But the lesson in Reverend Whitehead's story is this, is that he could look in the mirror, and his son is one of the richest athletes, you know, in pro sports, but he looked in the mirror, and he knew that he wasn't the man he wanted to be. He knew he wasn't there for his son, and he readily admits all that, but he decided to change. And he now is, as I mentioned, is an ordained minister. He's now started a group to really help the youth in Charlotte. And so I think we're fascinated with his story, at least I was, because I was fascinated with how honest he was with me. And I think that, you know, we all crave that honesty. We all know that celebrities, you know, celebrities have downfalls just like us. It's just they're not often real honest about them. So I'm very proud of the interview I just did with Reverend Whitehead. And, you know, and the name of my broadcast is True Facts with John Lieberman on CyberStationUSA.com. And I asked Reverend Whitehead, I said, you know what? I said, some of my listeners are going to say, you just said you were sorry to your son because he's making millions of dollars and he's going to now buy you a home and everything. And he said, you know what, John? He said, I know people are going to say that. He said, let me tell you something. He's like, Ray looked me in the eye, and he said, I am not going to give you anything until you help yourself. And
wow.
From that moment on, Reverend Whitehead has been sober since January 6, 2006. He's been sober, off of drugs, and a part of his son's life again.
Well, you know, and that's real life. And how can you go wrong with doing a story like that, John? We're down to about 3 or 4 minutes left, and I want to give you the last word. When it comes to this and your new radio work that you're going to be doing in your media company and all that and all the work that you've done in the past, what will we see from John Lieberman 5 years from now?
You know, I'm really excited about everything I have going on. The radio show on CyberStation is going to be truly interactive. It's going to be compelling, and we're going to get honesty out of people, and we're going to have real dialogue about crime, about justice, about government waste. That's the same thing you're going to see on Track180.com. And I'm also proud of the fact that along with my media company now, I'm branching off and actually starting to run a home care company for the elderly here in Manhattan as well, because I truly believe that the more we can do to make a difference in our community, you know, the better. And what I saw at America's Most Wanted was TV's power to make a difference. So now I want to use my radio broadcast, I want to use my internet presence on Track 180, and I want to use my business in New York, which is a franchise of Synergy Home Care. I want to use everything in my power to just really make a difference, because, look, we're only here on this earth once, so the more we can make a difference, give voice to the voiceless, help people who are in need, you know, that's what I believe, and that's what you're going to see out of me. I hope that 5 years from now we're having a conversation and we're talking about the exact same things, how the radio show's made a difference, how CyberStation has made a difference, how Track 180's made a difference, and how Synergy Home Care has made a difference. And if we're having that conversation, then I'll be happy.
That sounds good to me. John Lieberman, you're always welcome on the show, and I'll be listening to your new broadcast.
And you know what? Just one other quick thing. I know we're running out of time, but obviously we appreciate all that you do as law enforcement, and most of my great friends across the country are members of law enforcement, so you're going to hear plenty from them on all of my shows as well.
All right. That sounds great. Thanks, John.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's John Lieberman, formerly of America's Most Wanted, now on CyberStationLive.com with the True Facts with John Lieberman Show. John's a good guy. 6 years with America's Most Wanted. He knows how to do those shows. And voices for the voiceless. And I like that. And that's what we do here at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. And there are others out there, too. So we're always willing to give a plug for those that are doing something to help those that want to be heard. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with an author, Tom Philbin, discussing his new book, I, Monster. It's about the Green River Killer, Gary Ridgway, his own chilling words, and other serial killers. This is a creepy book, but if you're fascinated by serial killers and what they have to say, this is not for the faint of heart. Stay tuned. Tom Philbin will be here. Then after that, Mark Hollywood Hatton. You remember him? He was Anna Nicole Smith's boyfriend, lover for the longest time, and his book called Hollywood's Animania is out, and we're going to be talking about Anna Nicole. And you're going to say, why would you talk about Anna Nicole? Well, I'll tell you what, it's been 4 years. That's hard to believe since she's passed on. But even today, in fact, I just saw a story on Drudge Report today that Anna Nicole has, there's a new opera about Anna Nicole Smith. It's bizarre. We're going to talk to Mark Hatton about Anna Nicole and some of these other Hollywood train wrecks that are out there right now, what he thinks and how he can maybe make some suggestions on how they could survive and Anna didn't. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is a Dana Pretzer show on Scared Monkeys Radio. My next guest, Tom Philbin, is here to talk about his new book, I, Monster. And if you click on the link in the show notes, it will show you how to buy the book. What is I, Monster? Well, have you heard about any serial killer? Have you been thinking about them? Are you fascinated with them like I am? You will like this book, Green River Killer, Gary Ridgway, his own chilling words, other serial killers like Jack the Ripper, John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy, you name it, they're there. And some of the reviews I've read about the book are great, and it also, they say that it'll scare the hell out of you, and those are the kind of books I love to read. Tom Philbin, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I think, you know, it will scare some people, but it will make some people sick. No, I don't recommend it. I mean, I'm a ghoul,
yep.
Okay? I'm sort of like a ghoul. And there were, like, a couple of these killers' confessions. I got most of the stuff from police reports and confessions because usually they get to the truth with these guys. But, like, you know, Wesley Allen Dodd, you know, homicidal a pedophile, you know, pedophile killer. He was a child killer. I must tell you that I had tremendous difficulty, even though written a lot about crime, of getting through his entire confession. In fact, one of the detectives out in Washington State interviewing him had to be excused while he was interviewing Dodd, and he went into the bathroom and threw up.
Right.
I mean, this is people really want to get a good insight into what serial killers are really like. I think there's nothing like their own words, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's filled with that. Some are worse than others, Edmund Kemper is horrific because he had a terrific memory, and he, in his confession, he described all the gory details, and I mean literally gory details, and the reactions of the victims, you know. And I came away from it with a sort of a new perspective on serial killers, even though I've written about them a lot, you know. And they're really, they are monsters, and I think this book would give people a sense of that they are indeed monsters.
The book, the title, I Monster, is, I think, very prophetic, because when you look at some of the names here, some names I read off that people may not recognize, but with today's information technology, just Google them, you'll find out. But when you see this, you see their words, and I have a copy of the book, I've gone through it, and read it, like you say, make you sick. But with the media today, Tom, and the coverage of these individuals like Ted Bundy, all we have to do is say that name, the deliberate stranger, and people get creeped out just hearing the name or seeing the eyes, you know, the good-looking guy, the politician, whatever he wanted to be, and then what he was out doing. But we see the TV movie, or I think it had Mark Harmon playing him, and we see that, but you don't see the whole story. Dennis Rader, when he was in court and they were doing the confession thing, and he was, yes, I shot that person. But there's a lot more to it, and I'd like to get into that a little bit with you. You've been in the business a long time, and like you say, talking to the detectives and all of that. Let's get into the mind of an Edmund Kemper. Is this person, in your opinion, you know?
I have a theory. I have a theory, Dana, as to why they kill. I went to, you know, be open here. You know, I went to therapy myself, and some people say not enough, but not. I'm only kidding.
Okay.
But you know, I went 4 years, 3 times a week, and I didn't know this, but before I started, I didn't know this, what I learned when I was in therapy. And what I learned really was that and people are very serious as to what makes these guys go. To me, it all comes from childhood. And it usually, with a male, it's usually the mother who's a terrifying figure who just, you know, the kid, the child is very, very afraid of. Edmund Kemper, in fact, has a great example of his parents. Both were psychopaths, but the mother was really even worse. He did something wrong, and they got his pet chicken, and he regarded it like a little dog, you know, and they made him kill it, and then they ate it for dinner.
Jeez.
And he was just streaming down the street. So I think these people are so terrified, and you got to accept the existence of the unconscious, so terrified unconsciously of mothers and dads, mothers usually, that they try to handle it, try to deal with it by projecting the anxiety onto other people. For example, Bundy, you were talking about before.
Right.
Bundy killed maybe 40 girls. They don't know how many exactly. But when you looked at his victims, they all had, like, straight brown hair with a part in the middle. Guess who had her hair like that, you know? Has his mother. And in other words, I think these guys are killing their mother over and over and over again. They kill the symbols of the mother, and they that's how they just kind of pick their victims, and they have to do it again and again, and because the anxiety is always there. It's more than anxiety, and their childhoods are characterized by no one caring about them at all. Just no one. They're just treated like garbage. And they're afraid that they're going to get, you know, when you're a child and you have these feelings, that's a horrific experience, you know.
Absolutely.
I had a friend once, he told me something that I was just so horrific. He said to me, and I wonder why he didn't turn out to be a serial murderer, his mother, who was a psychopath, really, she said to him, Bobby, and he was 7 years old at the time, she says, I packed my bags and put them by the door. And if you're a bad boy, I'm going to pick up this bag and leave, and you won't see me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the kind of people you're dealing with, you know. Just it goes way beyond not giving a child enough care. It goes it's the opposite of that. It's just cruelty. And cruelty and abandonment, emotional abandonment, and these guys, it gets into them, and they have to deal with it. We all have to deal with our anxieties. Some guys project them into football games. They project them on some woman who looks like their mother and kills the mother, and the threat goes away, and then it builds up again. They got to do it again. So that's my theory on it.
Well, and it's a good point. And I've interviewed psychologists and psychiatrists and profilers and cops and you name it. And yeah, you're dead on when it comes to that. But I want to ask you, Tom Philbin's here discussing his new book, I'm Monster. There's a link in the show notes that you can click on to how to buy the book. When you look at this and you look...
Oh, people are going to buy the book.
Oh,
terrific.
You're damn right. So that's why you come on the show, man. I'm going to get some books sold for you. That's for sure.
Good.
When you look at this and you look at Hollywood, and sometimes the Hollywood glorifies these monsters, put them into a movie and make them look... I'm losing the words
here.
Make
them look human.
Make them look human, exactly, is the word I'm saying.
They're not human.
And no, they're not. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about, say, Jack the Ripper. There have been movies out there. There are Jack the Ripper fan clubs out there. I interviewed a guy the other day about Charles Manson, and Charles Manson has a big fan club out there. Why do people love...
You know what it is, Dana? I don't think, and I hope that this book does this, I don't think they really understand the brutality of murder like this, and they don't even understand what kind of people they're dealing with. In other words, I mean, I have some stuff here. Like, I was just reading something Edmund Kemper confessed to when he was stabbing a young girl to death, and he was just like, you know, he's figuring out where to put the blade so it goes into the heart, and then he said, I hit her, and it didn't go all the way. I'm a little uncomfortable talking about that stuff, but people can read it if they want it. Some people would be burned off by it, but he, you know, he stabbed her like 40 feet times,
yeah.
And you know, and then she was moaning, and it's just you know, they're most people don't know the reality of murder. Like, for example, if you saw, like, with O.J. Simpson,
yep.
and his wife, you know, her wounds, you know, he cut her neck so deeply that her head was almost came off.
She almost decapitated.
And those are the kinds of things, if you read, then these guys no longer become these gods or these heroes or whatever they are, you know.
I ask all authors...
So that's... Excuse me?
I always ask the author to come on to talk about a serial killer or a mass murderer, about their thoughts and about the death penalty. And how I frame the question is that many of them want to die. Many of them think that they shouldn't be...
Oh, good insight.
Yes,
very good insight.
Shouldn't be let out. And
excellent. I can give you a lot of examples of that, believe me.
Let's talk
a
about
A lot of them want to die. Bundy, here we go back to Bundy. And I'm sorry for interrupting, but you made such a good point, I just want to amplify on it.
Sure.
The Bundy, when he was in a kind of a little jail in Colorado, Rinky Dink jail, he asked his lawyer, he's in the 70s, he says, which states still have the death penalty? And his lawyer said, let's see, I think, Michigan and Florida. He says, oh, okay, ha-ha. And then he broke out of jail. Guess what state he headed for?
Yeah.
Florida. He got into a car without a taillight or two or something like that, and one taillight, and, of course, the cops saw him. And they picked him up, and after a while they identified who he was, and he was wanted at that time. He had committed 4 or 5 murders in Florida when he got there. And he was wanted for murder out in the West Coast, so on the West, Northwest. So you know, he arranged, really, I believe, to be caught. And people have to accept the existence of the unconscious mind to really understand this stuff. That there's another mind that works independent of our conscious minds, and that it dictates a lot of our behavior. And that's what psychiatrists do when they analyze people. But they unearth all these hidden thoughts. But you know, I think a lot of guys did that. They just, you know who's a good example of a mass murderer who did that? Timothy McVeigh.
Absolutely.
You know him, right?
Absolutely.
The guy who bombed the Murrah building?
Yep, absolutely.
You know, after he bombed the Murrah building down in Oklahoma City, killed all those kids and the people, he got into a car without a license plate, and drove away.
Yep.
And, of course, he was picked up by a cop. And then eventually they found out that he was the guy who, but he wanted to get caught. A lot of them do. I think all of them do, really, basically, deep down.
They want to get caught, and even they admit that they shouldn't be back in society because there's no place for them. And I guess my next question to you is, Tom, when you look at society, you look at the mental health system, you look at the system, the court system, the whole shebang, it's failed every one of these individuals because they were out there and they were able to kill.
Oh, yeah, they don't. The most, you know, the thing about, like, with cops, and my family, a number of people in it were police officers. The thing about cops, they have a mentality of, you know, like somebody said, like Jay Leno said once about Reagan, he didn't believe in the electric chair, he believed in electric bleachers, you know. the thing about cops is that they deal with the reality, the same kind of reality that's in I, Monster, you know, the chilling words of these guys. They deal with that all the time. And there's very little room for some liberal thinking or kind of like what happened in your childhood. All they want to do is, you know, let them ride old Sparky there. You know, that's all they want them to, the cops want to do, most of them, the vast majority of them, you know. Yeah. And also prosecutors, the whole legal system, they never try to understand. It's very hard to understand somebody who stabs a girl 60 times, you know. I mean, the tendency is not to even try. But if they did, and there are signs of that you can see in a child that you know he's going to grow up to be very screwed up and probably a serial killer. You know, if they can just somehow intervene early, and I don't know exactly how they do that, but if it would take early intervention to kind of stop these guys, to get them on the right path. Like, if you see a child, for example, the classic triad of behavior, like of a kid who sets fires, is cruel to animals, and wets his bed. I never understood the wetting bed one, but I can understand the fires they set, and also the cruelty to animals, because it gives them the power. And, you know, and that's a thing. That's another benefit that they get when they kill somebody. They feel power, and that's why they steal, all the trinkets and the things from their the wallets and the ID and all that from their victims, so they can relive the experience. But if somebody were to recognize those things and kind of just probe in it, they would knock some of them out of the box, as it were, and stop them, and because they need. If you see a kid like cruel to animals, really cruel.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're all cruel to animals when we're little. I mean, maybe bugs or something like that. But if you see a kid really cruel, or you see someone setting fires, those are two huge alarm bells. And better deal with it, you know.
Absolutely. The book is I, Monster, Serial Killers in Their Own Chilling Words. The author, Tom Philbin. Tom, thanks for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it, and I encourage everyone.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to talk to somebody who actually understands the subject.
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject.
Yeah, you go on a radio show and, it's a good book. What is it about? You know?
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks.
All right, sir.
Thanks, Dana.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And it will, I've read it. I'm looking at it right now. It's in my hands, and it will scare the hell out of you. But it's all fascinating, too, to see these serial killers in their own words. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. I'm going to take a break and come back with Mark Hatton. Mark Hollywood Hatton. He's a former lover of Anna Nicole Smith. And he'll be discussing his book about Anna, Hollywood's Annamania. That's here on The Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. I got to tell you, you know, and I've talked about it before. We've done many shows about Anna Nicole Smith, an actual tribute show at one time when she passed. And it's hard to believe it's been as long as it's been. You know, I was crushed. Some say that she was famous for being famous. No matter what, I was a big fan. Absolutely a beautiful woman, but saw her, we all saw her, you know, some would say self-destruction in played out in the media, and then when she passed on, not many were surprised. When I contacted my next guest, Mark Hollywood Hatton, and invited him on the show to talk about his book, Hollywood's Animania, I thought I would bring him on to talk about that. And some will say, talking about Anna Nicole Smith, she's been gone for so long. Well, I tell you what, I was on the Drudge Report today and looking around at stories like I do, and there's a big story on the Drudge Report about a opera about Anna Nicole Smith in London now. So Anna is gone but never forgotten, and it's always a big kick to do a show about Anna and invite Mark Hatton on the show. Mark, welcome to the program.
Oh, Mr. Pretzer, it is truly a pleasure.
An absolute beautiful woman. Let's take the negatives and set them aside for a bit. When you saw Anna Nicole Smith in her prime, as you did, a true beauty. There were later on with the prescription medications and all this sad stuff, but really when the term famous for being famous came out, I thought it as an insult somewhat, but then again, I guess it is true. Your thoughts about that term famous for being famous and Anna Nicole?
Oh, my thoughts, exactly. Anna was definitely the most amazing person that I ever had a relationship with and one of the most amazing human beings I've ever met in my life. And I could not get over just how famous Anna was. And I could tell you 100 stories, but I'll just tell you one. I said, Anna and Daniel, we wanted to go to Blockbuster Video and get Anna out of bed and take her down Ventura Boulevard, and thought we could just go and get a brand new TV from a, I believe it was a the Good Guys department store. And Anna says, no, I can't go. I can't go, Mark. I can't go. Everybody's going to recognize me. And I put this black wig on her and this big hat and these dark sunglasses and put a disguise on Anna. And as soon as we walked into the Fry's, people were noticing her, coming up to her, and it was pandemonium by the time we got out of the parking lot, which was Ventura and Boulevard and Laurel Canyon. And it was just something that I'll never forget. I just couldn't believe that Anna was that famous everywhere we went. If we went out to the Rainbow, we used to like to go dancing there. Women would come up and literally pee on themselves. I would look at them and pee would be running down their leg. Jeez. Into their shoes, because Anna blew just absolutely, you know, like Elvis, you know, the yeah. Beatles had that. Anna had that, you know. She's one of the great ones and always will be.
Absolutely. Mark Hollywood Hatton's here. You can click on the link in the show notes on how to pick up his book, Hollywood's Animania. Let's talk about that. Obviously, it's a simple answer why you wrote it, but tell us about Hollywood's Animania.
Well, you started out saying, set the negatives aside.
Yep.
And that is what I did in this fantastic tribute book. I decided that there were so many things that I could talk about Anna Nicole about, and I decided to save anything negative for my next book, which is a book that I'm going to call Railroaded, which is Sex, Drugs, and Anna Nicole, or Roller Coaster is a possible name. That's one that came in a dream. And originally it was going to be called Badass Hollywood Bad Boys, Sex, Drugs, and Anna Nicole, and that's all over the Internet. But I think I've decided to go with Roller Coaster. And Animania is just everything positive about Anna Nicole Smith. It would be things like her favorite little recipes. There's a recipe for a sour pickle cocktail. which is one of her favorite things, if you knew Anne as well as I did. I didn't focus on her drug addiction. I focused on the beautiful woman, and there's so many sweet stories in this. Another thing I did, which is special about this book, is the dedication is to her daughter, and I'm going to read it to you.
Sure.
It says, "Animania is hereby dedicated to the most noble princess, Dani Lynn Hope. May you get to know your legendary mother, the Queen, even a little better from this heartfelt tribute. Warmest regards, Hollywood." And that's, you said something about a play, and it's actually in the book before it came out, which is the Royal Opera in England.
Absolutely.
And, you know, her life is definitely worthy of an opera, and the chapter in that book is Shakespearean Rhapsody, and it's a very, very Shakespearean theme here. It's a fun book. I have everything in this book. A model that's pretty famous named Lexi Schaefer that's had magazine covers saying the next Anna Nicole Smith. My sister Jackie, who looks like Anna Nicole. A model named Nikki Rogers, who really embellishes Anna Nicole. Another model, Vicki Lynn Hart. These girls, and even myself, Matt and Nicole Smith, it's very fun because we all have Animania.
Right.
And there are so many Animaniacs out there in the world that it would be impossible for me to feature all of them, all the MySpacers, all the people that, you know, have this condition, which I call Animania. And I'd love to read you the definition of Animania here.
Sure, go ahead.
And at the Animania, a daily connection to the goddess Anna Nicole Smith, exude, embellish, embrace, or channel her spirit. Envision Anna Nicole's favorite things, follow her signs, and make the connection as you acknowledge her presence daily. Uncritical devotion, combining form, a specified condition, disorder of the mind, body, and soul, fueled by an overactive obsession craze about Anna Nicole Smith. And to take it a step further, her fans, which make this book possible and make Anna Nicole who she was and will always be and keep Animania alive, an Animaniac is a fanatical Anna Nicole Smith fan which has the symptoms of Animania. And that is, there are words in this book intentionally spelled the wrong way, like Animania is A-N-N-A-M-N-I-A-C, Animaniac, I mean. And then, yeah, it's a fun book. I've got the Perk Fish Kiss in here, her nickname, Niculio. There's definitions. I'm spelling two, T-E-W and U-Y-E-W.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that I really needed to do for my soul and for, you know, I believe I'll see Anna in the cosmos. Our souls will collide again. And I didn't want her to be mad at me when I saw her, or when I plan on, you know, the afterlife.
So you wanted to do a good job for sure. If you're just joining us, Mark Hollywood Hatton's here talking about his book, Hollywood's Animania. And it's hard to do the interview, Mark, without a couple of negatives, and I'm going to just touch on them very lightly. I want to get your comments on them. When you saw the reality show, even though it was still, and I think still is, probably the E! Channel's highest-rated reality show, even as many years ago as it was on, and you saw the, what can I call it, the downturn of Anna, it must have drove you crazy to see that. And then, when you hear that she's passed on, I don't even want you to comment on that. But what I want you to comment on, though, is when we have such a media-driven society now, and I'm going to use Lindsay Lohan as an example, and you see the negatives – the alleged drug use, the jail sentences, the everything, the downward spiral. How do you think, what do you think when you see that another talent that may end up, going the direction Anna Nicole did? I hope to God she doesn't, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, coming from Hollywood, California, Venice Beach, greater Los Angeles, I'm no stranger to, you know, the plastic fantastic friends with their party favors and their delights. And, some people can handle their medicine to a certain degree, and some people just lose all control, and they have these addictive personalities. And, you know, when they quit doing drugs, they turn it 100% around, and they work out in the gym, and they substitute with vitamins and healthy salads and nutritious, delicious things. It just seems as though, you know, everybody's different. It's so painful. It hurts me to see talent go to waste. Some of the greatest rock and roll songs, movies, things, the greatest things that have won the awards, a lot of those people, you know, got those higher concepts by altering the subconscious mind and obtaining the unknown and bringing it back. You know, Oliver Stone, people that, you know, they've admitted that they've done these drugs, but, you know, everybody holds it together a little bit better. It's a shame. I just hate to see, you know, a candle in the wind like Marilyn.
Yeah.
And I really hope Lindsay learns and gets it together and doesn't go out as a tragedy. And I see a lot of talent there. And I wish Anna could have made more movies and live life. And most importantly, been there for her daughter and her daughter, Dani Lynn. You know, what a painful thing little Dani Lynn's going to go through when she comes to the realization and gets older and you know, misses her mom more and more each day. And I just can't conceive somebody wasting their life with drugs and with a drug that's working against them inevitably. You know, I don't know about you. I've been there personally. I can say that I've recovered. And I feel a lot better that, you know, with my feet on the ground and a clear head.
Now, I want to give you the last word, Mark, because, as I said, our time would go by fast, and we're almost out of time. Again, Mark Hollywood Hatton's here, and click on the link in the show notes to get his book, Hollywood's Animania, and learn more about the beautiful Anna Nicole Smith. I want to ask you, and I'll give you the last word, when we see so much reality television these days, Mark, the Kardashians, and we can go on and on and on, and Anna Nicole actually was one of the early reality show stars out there. What do you think about reality television? Is it really reality television? Is that real life Hollywood, or are we just seeing a bunch of staged crap, for lack of a better term?
I think that it's a bunch of stage crap, for a lack of a better term, end quote. The reason being is because they fuel these shows with, you know, a huge budget. If you know what reality TV would be, is when you take somebody that's really struggling, really going through it. It would be like Paris Hilton.
Sure.
Who's actually in the book, because she wrote me a letter in prison and sent me a photo. But if you would have took Paris Hilton and Nicole and put them in The Simple Life, and they were really, really broke, I know they said they worked odd jobs, but somewhere along the line, they had money and they had things. I'd like to see a reality television show, like something I would call The Complicated Life.
Sure.
To where you just don't have the money for auto insurance, and you don't have the money to get your driver's license back from your drunk driving, and you're driving around, struggling, and you know that you're transmission blows up in your car, and you know the what the poor people go through every single day. I mean, my little sister Brock is probably one of the most talented people I know, and this girl, I'm so proud of her because you know she's done everything. I work on a cruise ship to go to different resorts and different places and work these jobs. But, you know, right now she's in Colorado struggling to make ends meet, working for a position where, you know, they're paying her peanuts for her talent. You know, the starving artists, I'd really love to see the starving artists as a focus in the reality television shows without all the money, without the budgets. Perhaps they're out there, but if you stick a bunch of people in a giant house and you call it Big Brother, and they're all pretty people, and they've all got all this food in their refrigerator. You know, the worst example or the best example I can think of would be the Jersey Shore.
Oh, yeah, God. Oh,
I mean, spoiled rotten brats.
Absolutely. Listen, Hollywood, thank you. I appreciate you coming on the show again. For you listeners out there, click on the link in the show notes. Pick up the book. It's fascinating. Let's do this again soon, Mark. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Mark Hollywood Hatton and talking about Anna Nicole Smith. Could we have done 20 minutes negative stuff about Anna Nicole Smith? Absolutely, we've done it. I can remember the Rita Cosby interview quite well. I thought it was fascinating seeing that there's an opera about Anna Nicole now. Why not bring on someone who was close? And Mark Hollywood Hatton has lived a hard life himself, and he could do a show just on that. That's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Our website is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up the show live, listen to podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, leave comments. And don't forget scaredmonkeys.com for all your news, views, and politics, and crime, and you name it. It's covered there. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.